This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Energy News. I'm Anne Gillan. Coming up on today's programme, a warrant is being sought by UK Information Commissioner to investigate the political consultancy firm Cambridge Analytica. The company is facing accusations that unlawfully used the personal data of 50 million Facebook users to influence the result of the US presidential election. While Facebook has suspended the firm, Damian Collins, MP, Chair of Media Committee, wants Mark Zuckerberg to appear before Parliament.
How does Facebook gather data on us? Do people know what data is being gathered? How is it being used? How do Facebook police third-party organisations using it? And when there's been a breach in the data rules, does Facebook really have the power to get that data back?
The 23 Russian diplomats expelled from the UK after the Salisbury attack have left the country today, and Russia media group Sputnik have been expelled from the Edinburgh Chambers of Commerce. Meanwhile, President Vladimir Putin continued to deny Russia was behind the attempted murder of the former double agent and his daughter.
Of course, any person with any brains understands that it's complete nonsense that Russia would carry on with that type of attack just before an election and the World Cup in football. It's ridiculous.
The UK fishing community have said they feel betrayed after the government has agreed to keep EU fishing policies during a 21-month transition period. Michael Barnier stated that the UK and the EU have agreed a large part of the Brexit transition period on issues covering trade and EU citizen rights. Shadow Brexit Secretary Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed these developments.
We last year in August said there are going to have to be transition arrangements. They're going to have to be on the same terms as now. We repeatedly challenged the government to accept our position. Now there seems to be that acceptance. And for businesses and for working people, this provides the certainty that they've been looking for.
A cross-party group of Scottish MPs have won permission for a judicial review of whether the UK can unilaterally revoke Article 50. A warrant has been sought by the UK Information Commissioner to search the offices of Cambridge Analytica. The data marketing firm has found itself in the midst of a scandal. This follows accusations that the company used the personal data of 50 million Facebook users to influence the US presidential elections. Our reporter Megan Bonner finds out more.
Cambridge Analytica, a firm that claims to create personal targeted political adverts, has found itself under fire this week, following allegations of using the data of Facebook users to influence voting decisions, including during the 2016 US election. The UK's Information Commissioner is investigating both Facebook, Cambridge Analytica and other social networking sites. Elizabeth Denham says her office is looking into more than 30 organisations.
We have been spending many months with our investigative team. We need to make sure that the public has more control and understands how their data may be used for political messaging and micro-targeting.
The data was used to identify the voting of intentions of users and craft messages more likely to resonate with them. Liam Bell, Research Fellow at the Centre for Distributed Computing, Networking and Security at Edinburgh Napier University, explained how Cambridge Analytica got the data and how they used it.
They got that data from a research firm, from a researcher in Russia. Now, the interesting part about that is that they had it under academic license, which means you can't use it for commercial purposes. Now, it is a data breach as well because they were harvesting data from third-party apps, which we all have connected to our Facebooks. Essentially, that data was used, so you harvested keywords from posts because those apps all have access to a ridiculous amount of information. What groups are you in? What are you posting? Who are you friends with? So they harvested keywords from your posts. So if you said were complaining about immigrants, for example, they could then identify that that was an issue that you identified with.
He went on to explain how political groups can use internet marketing in campaigns.
Actually, the interesting part there is Microsoft about 10 years ago asked the question. Rather they said that it's not a question in 10 years' time of whether internet marketing will be successful, will it be too successful? And I'd argue this was proven, yes, it's too successful because it gives you access to groups that don't believe in, but it gives you access to groups that don't interact with mainstream media, are traditionally populist groups, so you can get causes like the Five Star Movement in Italy they thanked the internet for their victory, because that was the internet that gave them access to the disenfranchised people that didn't trust.
In a Channel 4 news broadcast last night, fresh allegations were made against the firm. The company's chief executive, Alexander Nix, and other executives were filmed outlining techniques the company was prepared to use to help their clients. These techniques included the use of honey traps, fake news campaigns, and working with ex-spies to swing election campaigns globally. In the midst of the scandal, Facebook's value has fallen by £37 billion, despite his net worth plunging about £5 billion on Monday, and MPs having asked for the CEO to appear in Parliament, Mark Zuckerberg is yet to comment on the scandal. Cambridge Analytica have released a statement denying any wrongdoing, which we have voiced up.
Cambridge Analytica strongly denies the claims recently made by the New York Times, The Guardian and Channel 4 News. This Facebook data was not used by Cambridge Analytica as part of the services it provided to the Donald Trump presidential campaign. Personality-targeted advertising was not carried out for this client either. The company has made this clear since 2016.
Scottish Conservative MPs are meeting Theresa May today to discuss the agreement made to retain EU fishing policies during the Brexit transition period. Leader of the Scottish Conservatives, Ruth Davidson, has said that the deal falls short of what they had hoped for in the short term. Our correspondent, Owen Gardner, has more.
A new agreement has been proposed in Brussels regarding the control of UK fishing waters. It entails that the EU will continue to have control over UK waters during the Brexit transition period. The current common fisheries policy entails that all European fishing fleets have equal access to EU waters and fishing grounds and allows fair competition. Theresa May states that the agreement will be positive for the UK overall.
People have questioned whether we'd get agreement now. We have. I think what this shows is that with goodwill on both sides, working hard, we can get an arrangement for the future, which will be in the interests of the UK and in the interests of the European Union, and it will be good for all parts of the UK.
However, not everyone is happy with the consequences of the policy. Scottish Tory MP John Lamont described the UK not regaining control of their waters after the 21-month transition period as a betrayal.
Mr. Speaker, like many fishermen across Scotland, I feel very badly let down by this deal because we're not going to be taking control of our waters as quickly as what we had hoped.
According to Bertie Armstrong, the head of the Scottish Fishermen's Federation, the UK keeps 40% of what they catch in their waters. We spoke to Georgia Wright, an EU academic and expert in the UK relationship with the EU foreign policy, to get a further insight.
This was one of the areas that at the beginning when the government was negotiating with the EU rules around the implementation phase, and straight transition period, that was one of the areas that the UK was hoping to regain control of. However, the guidelines for the withdrawal agreement and transition period show that actually UK fishermen will not enjoy greater share of the fish available in their domestic waters throughout the transition period. So this would only change in January 2021.
Ms. Wright continued, suggesting that the situation wouldn't change.
I don't expect that the EU would budge on this. I think it has been something that the UK government and the EU negotiators have been discussing. I think the UK government has accepted now that this will be the case during the transition period. But obviously, when it comes to the future agreement, the UK will regain sort of that control over setting fishing quotas in its waters and also determining and granting access to EU vessels.
With people calling for full control of UK waters when the transition period ends in 2021, it is unclear if there will be a deal that will satisfy everyone.
Russian media group Sputnik have been expelled from the Edinburgh Chambers of Commerce. The news comes after the UK expulsion of 23 Russian diplomats following the attack on Sergei Skripal in Salisbury earlier this month. Rory Gilmore reports.
Since the nerve-agent attack on former double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia, tensions between the United Kingdom and Russia have become global news. Their decision to be expelled from the Chamber of Commerce came after a call from Edinburgh Conservative councillor John McLennan to hold a vote between councillors to terminate its agreement with Sputnik forthwith. Sputnik UK press officer Chris Brown heavily criticised the decision, calling it a discreditable moment.
We disagree with the decision, which we believe violates the principles of an independent and non-political body that the Chamber of Commerce claims to be. This is a discreditable moment in the Chamber's 230-year history and is a clear signal for other businesses in Edinburgh that media and political pressure can lead to expulsion from this business institution. Sputnik UK considers the decision to terminate Edinburgh Chamber of Commerce membership to be politically motivated.
The Chamber of Commerce offered a membership to Sputnik earlier this year, a decision that has been since criticised by representatives in Holyrood. MSP Alex Cole-Hamilton has been a vocal advocate of the UK distancing itself from Russian state media. He believes that expulsion was right.
I think it was the right decision. I think that at this time, particularly in the aftermath of the release of a chemical weapon on UK soil with the impact on British subjects that we've seen, that we have to reassess our entire relationship with Russia and indeed those news outlets who peddle Russian propaganda. So I think it's absolutely vital the Chamber of Commerce ended its relationship with Sputnik. Well, there's an irony in Sputnik saying that something's politically motivated. Well, arguably their whole existence and their reason for being is politically motivated to promote a positive veneer on the Russian state. But yes, of course, all of this is political. It's the games that nations play. But we have to recognise that this was a chemical attack on British soil, the first that we've seen in since, you know, potentially 100 years. And that commands a response.
He went on to criticise former First Minister Alex Salmond and his involvement with Russian media outlet Russia Today.
Absolutely. I think that people like Mr. Salmond, as being former First Minister, has made himself something of a useful idiot to the Kremlin because he has given them that veneer of respectability. It's a coup for them to have a former world leader fronting a chat show on their show. It makes it look them look credible.
The Exchange Tower in Edinburgh's West End has been home to Sputnik UK for 2 years. Although pressure from Scottish politicians is strong, this decision of expulsion has only heightened the tension between the two.
With the latest updates on the international news today, here is Gregor Kerr.
Three students have been injured after a shooting at Great Mills High School in Maryland, United States. One of the three was a shooter himself. They have all been taken to hospital. The school was left in lockdown after a student opened fire on two fellow students. Sheriff officials said the event was contained and the FBI was at the school to ensure the safety of the staff and students. A witness, Al Murray, filmed the police responding to the incident and said he saw at least one officer entering the building with a rifle and a shotgun. One student, Jonathan Freese, spoke on the phone from his maths classroom during the lockdown.
I'm in my maths class right now when it happened, and we've been on lockdown for about 30 minutes or so. I didn't think it would really happen. It happened in the art hallway. And that's pretty much all I know at the moment. Right now, the police were going through classrooms and checking, making sure students are safe.
An aeroplane has crashed at an RAF rally on Anglesley. The ambulance service arrived at the scene at 1:30 today. The Ministry of Defence has confirmed that it was a Hawk aircraft which crashed. An RAF spokesman said, "We are aware of an incident today at the RAF rally involving a Hawk aircraft. We are investigating the incident and it would be inappropriate to comment further at this stage." A fifth bomb has exploded in Texas in the early hours of this morning at the FedEx depot in Schertz, 65 miles south of Austin. Police have said one FedEx worker has sustained minor injuries as a result of the bomb. It is yet to be determined whether the latest blast is another in the serial bombings that began on March 2nd this year. Police Lieutenant Manny Casas made a statement.
But what we know, the box was a medium size, what I was being told, was on a conveyor belt when the explosion occurred. We're hoping it's an isolated incident, but it's too early to determine if it is connected to the other explosions.
So far, two people have been killed and another four injured. Police originally were investigating racial motivations for the attacks, but after a tripwire triggered an explosion injuring two white men, this was ruled out. A former French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, is being held in police custody over allegations that he received funding in 2007 for his presidential campaign from late Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. Despite the original investigation beginning in 2013, French media say that this is the first time the former president has been detained in relation to allegations. The claim surfaced from a French-Lebanese businessman, Ziad Takedine, along with other former Gaddafi regime officials. A two-year-old girl has died in a car was found in the River Teffy, Cardigan, in Wales. The young girl has been named as Kira Moore. She was pulled from a silver mini in water in Cardigan yesterday evening. Early this morning, local police confirmed the death of the two-year-old at the University Hospital of Wales in Cardiff. Kira's family are being supported during this time. Her father, Jet Moore, has posted a tribute to his daughter and details of the incident on Facebook. He wrote, "She was an incredibly happy young girl who I hope lived a great, adventurous, fun life." Kira would have celebrated her third birthday next Tuesday.
Coming up, we have the local news, the latest sport, as well as the travel and weather updates. The time is now just after 4:30. Schools across East Renfrewshire will be supplied with virtual reality headsets, the council has announced. 30 schools are in line to receive the new technology at a cost of £250,000. East Renfrewshire Council will be the first local government in the UK to roll out the programme, with both primary and secondary schools affected. Neil McLashan reports.
Since the implementation of Curriculum for Excellence in 2011, Scottish education has been reformed year after year to help it to adapt to the 21st century. However, we are now seeing a more dramatic change to our schools in some areas. East Renfrewshire Council has become the first UK local authority to invest in virtual reality headsets. The council has invested in 900 VR headsets for all 30 schools in its area at the cost of £250,000. Education convener for East Renfrewshire, Paul O'Kane, believes the headsets will be used in conjunction with traditional learning to make Scotland stand out as a leader in education.
I hope that we are, you know, where East Ren leads, others tend to follow. We're obviously a very high-achieving authority and we tend to lead the way, and I hope that other authorities and indeed the Scottish Government will take seriously the opportunities that technology presents. I think things like coding, for example, now being taught in our secondary schools.
These changes come alongside schools in the area being given Wi-Fi to help ease the strain on IT facilities and help children learn online from their phones. Head teacher of Mearns High School, Ian Phillips, said,
"One of the kind of big changes was the infrastructure, where all the schools now have Wi-Fi. So all the kids now have access to what we call bring your own device. So they can now use their phones in classes, so that rather than have to book an IT room, you can go straight in, take your phones out, and then do a bit of research there under the guidance of the teacher."
With these headsets due to arrive at schools in the next year, they open up opportunity for children to learn their subjects in different ways.
We have even down to things like worksheets, which are almost augmented reality, so you can actually look at a code on the sheet, and it may be of a planet, and all of a sudden this thing comes to life in front of your eyes, and you can put your finger out, spin the planet round, have a look at what's happening there. You can actually move around it to see kind of in context of what's happening, and then you get the opportunity to start answering some questions on that.
Of course, this is just the beginning, and if this trial goes well, we may see more VR in schools across the country.
The race to become Labour General Secretary is heating up, with Jenny Formby the favourite to take the hot seat. However, controversy surrounds Formby after she hired Vicky Kirby, who has previously been suspended by the party for making anti-Semitic comments on social media. This has resulted in key Labour members stepping down from their positions. Correspondent Duncan Gorman reports.
With the vote for the next Labour General Secretary well underway, Vice Chair of Labour's National Executive Committee, Jenny Formby, is currently the favourite person to take the position. However, Formby is very much a controversial choice. In 2014, Formby faced severe backlash after employing Vicky Kirby, who had previously been suspended by the party after anti-Semitic comments on social media. This has prompted several senior Labour members to step down, with Director of Governance, John Stolliday, and Director of Policy and Research, Simon Jackson, being the latest big names in a string of departures. Unite the Union has expressed that Formby should distance herself from these claims.
Ms Kirby has consistently expressed her heartfelt regret about her comments, and she has attended training courses to assist with her wider understanding of the offence her remarks had caused. Such appointments are not the prerogative of the Regional Secretary in any case, but are made following a procedure involving lay members and other officials. Any attempt to suggest otherwise is a smear against Jenny Formby, whose operation to anti-Semitism is a matter of record. Ms Kirby has not been employed by Unite since.
Ewan Phillips, leader of Labour Against Anti-Semitism, thinks there is no place in the Labour Party for this discrimination.
The choices between Jenny Formby, with her track record of failing to deal with anti-Semitism, of being intensely relaxed about anti-Semitism to the point where she was happy to reportedly employ someone who'd been suspended by the Labour Party for anti-Semitic comments, On the one hand, you know, she's totally inappropriate. It's a disgrace that the Labour Party, which is supposed to stand up for the values of all, has been compromised by racial discrimination. I think it's appalling.
Regardless of the controversy, it is thought that Formby is going to be announced as the General Secretary within the coming days.
With local news, here's Gregor Kerr.
A report from the BBC has found that a quarter of main roads in Edinburgh are in need of resurfacing. Research found that up to 24% of A roads managed by the Edinburgh City Council fell into the red or amber category for repairs. The report by the BBC data unit estimated that up to 19 miles of road in the capital is at risk of being declared unsafe to drive on. One Edinburgh taxi driver shared his reaction to the statistic.
No, I think it's actually quite a bit more than that. It's 75%. There's very few that are actually fit for purpose, like, very few.
The report also found the East Lothian Council to be the worst performing authority across the region, with 29% of A roads listed in red or amber warning bands. Mid Lothian and West Lothian ranked among the lowest, with 20% and 80% requiring work respectively. Transport chiefs have said that improving the quality of roads in the city is a major priority. A man has been arrested and charged following a robbery at an off-licence on Brunswick Street in Leith. The 50-year-old man was detained after a three-figure sum of cash was stolen from the store Oddbins on the evening of Sunday the 4th of March and was remanded in custody at Edinburgh Sheriff Court yesterday evening. As well as charges in connection with the robbery, he has also been arrested in connection with the recovery of a quantity of drugs from a car in Edinburgh on the 14th of March. Parents spotted parking near James Gillespie's High School in Edinburgh have been warned that they could potentially be slapped with a fine. Due to health concerns, the school has warned that people spotted with their car engines running nearby will face fines if spotted by environmental wardens. The scheme aims to help protect school children from the toxic fumes produced by the vehicles. Bright signs have been prominently displayed outside the school, but the crackdown comes after several cars chose to ignore those warnings. Last October, Davidson Mains High School in Edinburgh chose to take action. They put up signs and monitored areas around peak times for cars, leaving the engines running outside the school gates, although no fines were placed. And finally, Edinburgh has been voted inside the top 10 places to live in the UK, according to a report from TripAdvisor. The city has been voted in second place behind London, while Glasgow made sixth on the list. Hayley Coleman from the website explained how the rankings were decided.
Looking at the last 12 months, we analysed millions of reviews on TripAdvisor, specifically related to hotels, attractions and restaurants in each of those destinations. And we're looking at the quality and quantity of those reviews and how they're changing over time.
With sports, here's Chris Gourley.
Scotland manager Alex McLeish says may experiment a different captains in the upcoming friendlies against Paraguay and Hungary. McLeish aims to find a leader to fill the void left by Celtic's Scott Brown, with Liverpool's Andy Robertson and Celtic's Kieran Tierney long-term favourites, although Tierney has pulled out of the friendlies due to injury. However, McLeish is aware that switching between captains could be risky and cause uncertainty in the team, saying it's not something he tends to do for many matches.
It's not something that I would like to do long term, because, you know, I'd like to either have an ongoing captain and maybe a vice captain. Maybe you've got three, because at any given time the captain could be out of the squad or he could be injured.
Miami Open tournament director James Blake has urged Chiefs to change seeding procedures after Serena Williams was handed a tough first-round tie as she makes her comeback after the birth of her first baby daughter. Blake believes Williams has effectively been penalised for taking 13 months maternity leave as she will face Indian Wells title winner Naomi Osaka. Blake said these kind of changes shouldn't happen. She has won this title so many times she needs protection. Men's world number one Roger Federer says retirement can wait as he prepares for their Miami Open that starts this week. Federer's unbeaten season was ended by Juan Martín del Potro in the final of Indian Wells on Sunday, which sparked rumours that he was ready to hang up his racket, but insists such rumours are wide off the mark.
I guess ever since I became world number one back in 2004 and won Wimbledon in 2003, my life was complete, you know, as a tennis player. Those were my dreams as a little kid. So that's why retirement can wait, and I'm just really enjoying the ride, you know.
Formula One returns this weekend, with practice for the Australian Grand Prix getting underway on Friday. The same questions are being asked by fans all around the world. Can anyone stop Lewis Hamilton? This season we may see a significant slide in performance as a new visually impaired Halo driver head protection device is being used on all cars. Hamilton is, of course, the favourite going into the new season, as Ferrari driver Sebastian Vettel insists Mercedes are still the team to beat, but admits Ferrari are starting from a good base with their new car.
And finally, the world's last surviving male northern white rhino has died after months of poor health, leaving only two females of the kind left. Hopes for the future of the species rest with developing IVF techniques. Heather Miller reports.
Sudan, the last male northern white rhino, sadly passed at his home in Ol Pejeta Conservancy in Kenya on Monday. The decision to end the gentle giant's discomfort means that only two female rhinos of the species remain in the world, causing worry of extinction for conservationists. We spoke to Simon Jones, founder and CEO of Helping Rhinos Innovation and Conservation, who told us a bit more about Sudan himself and the importance of protecting the species of the northern white rhino.
So he died effectively of old age. The really sad thing about Sudan is that he was the last of the northern white, of the last male of the northern white rhino. So what his passing represents is a really a terrible message of what humans have done for the northern white rhinos. If anything good can come out of Sudan's death, you know, obviously being the last male, he's getting a lot of media attention. So the awareness that he in his death is helping to raise the plight of rhinos generally, and particularly the northern white rhino, that hopefully is one good thing that will come from the last action he will be able to take.
In 2009, the last four remaining northern white rhinos consisting of two males and two females were transported from Cheksu to Ol Pejeta in Kenya in hope that they would mate and reproduce. However, no pregnancies occurred. Conservationists have turned to the developing IVF techniques after preserving genetic material from Sudan and other males of his species. The plan is to use the stored sperm and eggs from the remaining younger females and implant the embryo in a surrogate southern white rhino. The programme is due to rack up a costly bill upwards of $9 million. Simon Jones explains how they hope to raise the necessary funds.
So there's various different campaigns and fundraising activity and applications to various corporate bodies and people to support it, to try and help come up with the initiatives, the funding that we need.
He also explains the process of IVF.
So we're looking at in vitro fertilisation, which is taking stored genetic materials, you know, frozen semen from the males and harvesting eggs from the females, and then creating a northern white embryo, with the plan being to then insert that embryo into a southern white rhino, who then acts as a surrogate mother, and if everything goes to plan, give birth to a northern white rhino calf in due course.
The death of Sudan has caused a worldwide awareness to the serious case of extinction that exists. Dr. Michael Knight, chairman of the SADC Rhino Management Group and the IUCN African Rhino Specialist Group, told us about their work in conservation.
Our role is essentially to try and further the conservation of rhinos on the African landscape. So we are focused primarily at the moment on black rhinos and white rhinos. Look, our biggest challenge at the moment is rhinos have been exposed to unprecedented poaching, and as you know, we've lost considerable number of rhinos over time.
Experts are in hope that the species of the northern white rhino can survive with the aid of IVF.
For the travel and weather updates, here is Adam Zavasky.
On Queen Street westbound in Edinburgh, a stagecoach bus has broken down at the traffic lights at North St David Street, meaning the inside lane is blocked. On Melville Street in Edinburgh, pedestrian crossing update works at Lonsdale Terrace are causing delays eastbound from Tallcross and westbound from before Marchmont Road. We are going to be experiencing light westerly winds for the rest of today, and with high pressure producing clear blue skies, the chance of rain is very low. Although we are now officially in spring, hats, scarves and gloves will still be useful as temperatures will fall overnight. Tomorrow is going to be warm but wet and windy. That's the travel and weather forecast for now.
Thank you, Adam, and now for a recap of our headlines. A warrant is being sought by the UK Information Commissioner to investigate the political consultancy firm Cambridge Analytica. The company is facing accusations that it unlawfully used the personal data of 50 million Facebook users to influence the result of the US presidential election. While Facebook has suspended the firm, Damian Collins, MP, chair of the Media Committee, wants Mark Zuckerberg to appear before Parliament. The 23 Russian diplomats expelled from the UK after the Salisbury attack have now left the country. Russian media group Sputnik have also been expelled from the Edinburgh Chambers of Commerce. The UK fishing community have said they feel betrayed after the government has agreed to keep EU fishing policies during the 21-month transition, despite Michael Barnier stating that UK and EU have agreed a large part of the Brexit transition period on issues covering trade and EU citizen rights. And that's all for now from Radio Energy News, and our next update will be at 6 o'clock.
Hear it. Feel it. Listen again at www.radioenrg.net.